Winning Cures Everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in. Happy Sunday morning. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
This is Winning Cures Everything. Turn down the sweet jams. And this is the College Football Week 6 Recap Show. As always, brought to you by Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They've got 6 incredible sports books. You can go find them over at tunicatravel.com. Chris, this was a fun weekend, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It was a good weekend.
It was a good setup for next week, which is going to be massive. Absolutely massive. I mean, there's some humongous matchups next week. Some that would have been bigger had other teams won as opposed to not. But I mean, there were some fun games and a lot of big-time stuff that kind of sets the mood for the rest of October. This is when you separate the pretenders from the actual contenders. And I think you could see that with a lot of these games. Now, before we get into anything, of course, you can find us over at winningcureseverything.com. You can subscribe on the YouTube. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your favorite podcast app is. Go hit subscribe. Leave a nice review for us. We would definitely appreciate that. And then if you're on YouTube, hit subscribe and make sure you comment in. Tell us what you think about the show. Tell us what you think about the picks. Tell us what your picks are, etc. We like to hear from you. We want you in. Every week we do a pick'em contest. So far, we've got one person that has picked 6 of the 7 games, and we've got 3 more today for the NFL. So, lots to discuss there, but yeah, you can join in on that. If you would, go and sign up for the newsletter. Now, I've been telling everybody about this. The newsletter is the only way to get the metric sheet for college football and the NFL. Dude, I'm going to go in and tell you. College football, the first 3 weeks, it was 64-75 against the spread. That's only a 46% win rate, right? Not great. So if you're just a regular Joe Schmo, $5 better, you bet on every single game, you would have been down $73.80. However, over the last 3 weeks, that metric sheet has gone 88-57 against the spread. That is 60.69%. $5 better on every game would have won $115.40. That is a net profit for the entire season. If you had bet every single college football game, you would have won $41.60 off of just being a $5 better. That's a pretty good return on investment, right?
Yep.
Not too shabby. So if you feel like having a rooting interest in literally all 40 plus whatever odd games on college football, you know, weeks, this is the way to go about it. But yeah, you can get that exclusively in the Winning Cures Everything newsletter. Go check that bad boy out. Chris, let's fire into this. Florida and Auburn. Now, Florida wins 24-13. Before I give out a bunch of stats, do you want to jump in with a thought on this?
I mean, no. I mean, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be, which is a hard-fought defensive game, low scoring, and the scoring Florida had was due to turnovers and their defense getting them in great, you know, field position over and over again.
Or the busted play at the end of the fourth quarter. Yeah. Bo Nix was 11 out of 27, 145 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 picks. Kyle Trask, on the other hand, 19 out of 31, 234 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks. The injury that he had, I thought he was done. I thought he was done for the rest of the game. And, you know, you had Emory Jones come in, looked pretty good, went 5 out of 7. But the big portion of this is that Florida was actually able to run the ball at least some, which took pressure off of the quarterback.
Correct.
LaMichael P. Ryan, 14 rushes, 130 yards. Now, one of those was an 88-yard touchdown that he ran right into the middle of the pile and bounced it out and just outran everybody.
Just somehow came out of it, and yeah, you're right, just took off.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. It was fun to watch. This was a fun game to watch.
It was a good game. Two really good teams. Two really good football teams.
Yes, it was. You know, Auburn, I'm looking at them. I don't think as poorly of them as I thought I would had they gotten beat, right? So going in, like I said on the show last week, if Auburn loses this, if they don't cover, Like, I'm done with them. That's it. You know, this is a crap football team, whatever. I don't really feel like that. I feel like they had a freshman quarterback in a spot, and you and I have talked about this before. You and I argued about this, about freshman quarterbacks, and sometimes they're really good, but sometimes they just have a day. You know?
But they just have a day. But every quarterback that has played this Florida team, no matter what age they are, look like this. So it's just, I mean, you can't say, well, he looked like that because he's a freshman. No, he looked like that because Florida makes quarterbacks look like that.
Okay, you do have a valid point there. They have got a fantastic defense.
Yes, the kid is a freshman. If he was a redshirt sophomore or a true junior and he looked like this, would it change anything? No. He's still going to throw those picks because the defense baits him. The defense jumped a lot of routes where the ball was thrown well. The ball was thrown fine. The receiver was open for a split second, and a DB just made a hell of a move on the football.
And now there were some of those. Now, good gracious, the one that he threw in the end zone, he never even looked at the safety.
No, I'm not talking about all of them, but like there are times when defensive players are just going to make plays.
Yeah.
Florida's got those guys. We talk about it all the time. They've got the dudes to do it. I didn't think Trask would have anywhere close to the kind of game that he had against this this Auburn defense. And the only thing I can think of is so far Auburn's defense has gone up against some really good offenses. And they've had to get up and get up and get up. And they've also had to carry the team, which they're going to have to do the entire season. Being an LSU fan, this is how our team has been built. My team has been built forever. And it's a lot of pressure. And all you have to do is have one off drive or busted play like they had at the end. And it's deflating. It's debilitating because you don't know. You know your offense isn't going to go out there and hang 40 on people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, that's entirely true. Florida, I definitely don't expect them to hang 40 on anybody other than Tennessee, who they put 34 on. But yeah, Florida looked really good. That sets up a massive showdown. There wasn't much to talk about with the LSU-Utah State game, but LSU handles business there 42-6 and sets up a gigantic night game in Death Valley. I know you're excited about it.
You think it's crazy that game day is going to a Florida game twice in 2 weeks in a row?
A little bit, but, I mean, there's not a bigger game next week.
I don't disagree, but it's just rare that they pick the same team 2 weeks in a row.
Well, have they
ever done that?
They wouldn't. Yeah, I'm sure they have. I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't know that they have.
But it wouldn't surprise me because like Florida winning last week yesterday was a massive deal, like just a humongous deal because it puts them in what maybe number seven, number eight range as far as ranking. And then LSU is a top four team, so. I mean, you got to battle the top eight teams, maybe. Like it doesn't get any bigger. And it's on ESPN.
I have both those teams higher than that.
That's well, yeah, and so do I. But according to AP rankings, whatever, which is what.
ESPN yeah, because they're never going to drop teams that, no matter how good they've looked, they came in the season preseason something, and they just don't drop them until they lose, no matter how they look or who they have played. So
exactly. So that's going to be a massive game, and it doesn't get any bigger than that. I mean, that's just, I'm sure that you are excited about it. Of course, LSU, once they get done with Florida, then they got to go through the gauntlet of Auburn and Alabama and Texas A&M and which A&M.
This is when the season starts for LSU. I mean, going to Texas was a big, big deal. That was nothing to laugh at by any stretch of the imagination, but this is when the season starts.
You have got that right. All right, let's move into topic number two. Cincinnati 27, Central Florida 24. This was on Friday night. UCF, four turnovers, and this is kind of a trend here. I know that we talked about they just make any quarterback look like that. But again, freshman quarterback goes into a hostile road environment. Cincinnati made him look pedestrian.
To do with the quarterback. Did you watch the game?
I absolutely watched the game.
The entire front seven was in the backfield. Not two or three. The entire front seven was in the backfield as soon as the ball was snapped.
Now that was that was in the second half. In the first half, and think about all of the different times that they got into the red zone because they were scheming against that, and he just made some bad throws once they get down close to the end zone. They had so many red zone turnovers, so many missed opportunities. And to Cincinnati's credit, they took advantage of it. That Ritter kid is a tough SOB, man. He is absolutely...
This is a good football team.
Yeah. No, what's crazy is that he did not look that good early in the season. And now everybody's saying, well, he's healthy now, he's 100%, et cetera. And I'm trying to figure out why... Like, I guess if you're 70%, you can play, you just don't look as good.
That's right.
But how can you heal while you're playing? Like, that just seems weird to me. Maybe you can explain it to me.
I don't have an answer for that. God, no, I'm definitely not a doctor, and I don't know.
I mean, he hadn't missed a game. About
the human body.
Yeah.
But, I'm not going to pretend. I know where it hurts on me all the time. It's mold, and I'm out of shape. But no, this is a good football team. This is a really good football team. They're well coached. They don't beat themselves. The only game they've looked bad in was against Ohio State.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you can fault anybody for that.
No. No chance.
And I'm not beating this kid up at quarterback for UCF either.
No, I'm saying he played fine. There were moments where he
beat the hell out of him.
Yeah. Oh no, they absolutely did. Cincinnati did run for almost 200 yards. They just lined up and ran it down their throats. They are the bigger, more physical team on the line of scrimmage. There's not a lot of teams that are going to be able to do that to UCF. Cincinnati was one of maybe two, three on their schedule.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, outside of the the Navy, I don't know another team that's going
to be. So UCF has to play at Tulane later in the year. And I was just about
to say, Navy and Tulane would be the only two teams that will line up and be more physical than them and run the football on them. It's the reason I like Cincinnati in this game. It's the reason I bet them is because I thought they were going to slow this game down. I didn't know they'd be able to run on them the way they were, but I knew they would run the football, control the line of scrimmage, control the clock, and minimize possessions because I saw Pitt do that. And I think Cincinnati's a better football team than Pitt. I think Cincinnati's a really good team. I think they're not getting the credit they deserve. It is what it is. But they're a good football team. They're a tough team. And they're going to be a tough out in the American. They just are.
No, I absolutely agree with that. They close the regular season Thanksgiving week at Memphis. And that is going to be entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I might try to go to that game, weather pending. If it's decent outside, I'm going to try to go to that.
I can understand that. All right, let's move on. Topic 3, Ohio State 34, Michigan State 10. Not a lot to discuss here. Ohio State led 27-10 at the half after a 24-point second quarter. J.K. Dobbins, look, 24 rushes, 172 yards. He is averaging on the season 7.1 yards per carry. He's ridiculous. He's absolutely ridiculous. Fields, he was only 17 out of 26 for 206 yards, two touchdowns, one interception.
Fields made a couple of throws that were really close to being picked off.
Yeah.
And if Michigan State takes those balls away, in a game in which you kind of beat the hell out of the other team, he did not look great.
No, but Michigan State has a tendency to do that, right? They will take away what you're really good at. And or take away your best player. But to their credit, Ohio State had plenty of options. J.K. Dobbins is an absolute beast. I don't know that there is anybody on this Ohio State schedule other than maybe Penn State that will be able to line up talent for talent with them. Because I think Ohio State has also been able to out-scheme everybody as well. And that I don't know.
I'm
that
very interested to watch Ohio State, Wisconsin.
Yeah. I don't think Wisconsin's got the athletes.
You can think that. That's fine. They got dudes up front on both sides of the football.
I mean, if they can keep the football away from Ohio State for, 45 minutes out of the ball game.
Their front seven are going to hang too. They're not going to run the ball on them like that.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. Again, there wasn't a whole lot to discuss there, but let's keep in the Big Ten. And we'll move on over to Michigan 10, Iowa 3. Now, did you watch this game?
I did. I watched all of this game.
Now, you and I enjoy defensive struggles.
We do.
But, man, there was something about this one that was just a little icky feeling.
I liked it. I watched it. I enjoyed it.
the way that Michigan was able to get into the backfield, like, was just ridiculous. Iowa could not block
that. That's what we've expected Michigan to be the entire year, and they haven't been that yet.
Right. 261 total yards for Iowa, 267 yards for Michigan. Iowa had 30 rushes for one net yard. Now, you, of course, disagree with this statistic where sacks are taken out of the rushing total.
Yeah, no, yeah, they should always go against the passing total. The NFL has it right, and college football has it wrong.
Yeah, so
that's just the truth.
It's pretty crazy. Iowa, like, Nate Stanley did not look good. He had three interceptions in this game. Iowa could get basically nothing going. Every time, the last drive of the game, where they, or I guess the second to last, was it the second to last where they had so many penalties? They get down
when they had three penalties in a row in the red zone.
Kirk Ferentz had to be, well, and they weren't quite to the red zone yet, but they, I think they were on like, what, the 25 or 24 or something like that.
So they were really close, and they end up on the other side of the 50.
Which is just, Kirk Ferentz had steam pouring out of his ears.
Yes. That is not Iowa football. And I wonder, this Michigan defense has the offense so frazzled, there is no being disciplined, there is no maintaining composure, or is it just one of those situations where the guys at offense were so frustrated they couldn't get anything going that people are just way overzealous just trying to make something happen?
I think it was probably a combination.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't know the answer, but it was very Iowa-like, very un-Kurt Ferentz team-like.
It's, to see them score 48 points last week, now granted, that was Middle Tennessee State. Yeah, I get it. They win 48-3, and then you go to Michigan, who has not looked great this year, and you can only put up 3 points. It was not efficient. It didn't look good. And now Iowa's got to go and handle Penn State next week.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game.
Now, they do good at home, so, like, that's good. But, man, that was a rough one to watch. It just, the amount of times that Michigan was able to get into the backfield and kind of close that pocket on Nate Stanley, it made me so uncomfortable. I don't know what it was about it. Like, every time I watched them get back there, I was like, no, like, somebody blocked somebody. And they just
this is the Michigan defense we've been looking for all year. Michigan's going to win. If they're going to win, they're going to do it on defense. They're not going to do it on offense. It's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Shea Patterson's not the best quarterback on that team, and I don't know why they refuse to make the change.
Well, Dylan McCaffrey's got a concussion, right? He was in concussion protocol.
So I was asking that to some people yesterday, texting with them. Is McCaffrey healthy? Is the question I asked, and the response was, even if he's not healthy, he's got to be a better option. But if it's a concussion situation, then that's different. Yeah. He's out.
Yeah, they had put him in the last game, and he got knocked out of that one. So let's move on. We're going to move over to the Big 12. And I know that you're excited to talk about this.
Baylor Matt Rule, 31, baby.
Wait, say what?
Matt Rule, baby.
I believe that. Baylor 31, Kansas State 12. Now, I was convinced that Kansas State would probably win this game, because Baylor had such a massive game last week. And there were still skeptics last week of, okay, this was a fun game between Baylor and Iowa State. But, I mean, really, how good are these two teams, et cetera? Well, you found out this week, Iowa State beat TCU 49-24.
They're pretty good.
Both of these teams are really damn good, and there is a clear divide between the top four teams in the Big 12.
No
and
doubt.
Everybody else.
It ends at Iowa State. That's right.
And it's
and the chasm is getting bigger.
Yes. How insane is it that Iowa State is the fourth out of those? Yeah. Like, that's a really good football team.
Yeah.
And they,
my
and
Baylor Bears in the second.
Oh, man. So, Baylor, we'll see what happens next week. Obviously, you've got Texas and Oklahoma. It would not shock me to see Texas win that game. They do it pretty regularly, even when they're complete crap.
I don't know. This Oklahoma team's different than the last couple.
Agreed. Their defense does look a lot better than they have. But going back to Baylor, you know, Charlie Brewer, 14 out of 23, 230 yards, one touchdown. They just handled this game
They no do it problem. On the ground, and they do it with defense. And that is a – what did Matt Rhule do at Temple? He made – it was – they were the most physical team I've ever seen play without having, like, super athletic dudes.
Yeah,
they were big just and strong and fast. Yes, if that guy ever took over an SEC football team that could get big, athletic freak dudes – it would be scary.
Yeah.
It really would be scary. Because even at Baylor, they get speed like nobody's business. They get skill players like nobody's business. He's bringing in some strong dudes, some tough guys. I know they're tough, but they don't have the athletic ability that Alabama, Florida, Georgia, LSU, even Tennessee, and these other Mississippi State schools like that are bringing in. Auburn. If Matt Rhule took over a program with that kind of athlete that was that big and strong and fast, I don't know that anybody's beating him. I don't know that anybody's beating him.
No, I think you're probably right.
They're going to struggle against Texas. They're going to struggle against Oklahoma because both those teams are far superior athletically. But I don't know that they lose both those games. I could easily see them splitting that series.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Iowa State, on the other side, I mean, just handled TCU yes. like it was nothing.
Oh, man.
Brock Purdy, listen to this game. 19 out of 24, 247 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. On top of that, he had 12 carries for 102 yards and 2 more touchdowns. Like, the kid was unstoppable. When he has games like that, there's no stopping that team.
No. He's really, really good at football. And last week, Baylor just made him look bad. And that's fine. That's going to happen sometimes. I give credit to Baylor and don't knock him at all for that. He showed this week, yeah, don't question me. It wasn't me. That other team took it away. I play anybody else.
I hate that game was so early in the season and there was no hype for it because that was a fantastic football team.
But there should have been hype. There absolutely should have been hype.
Well, I think there would have been more.
That's shame on the media people. That's shame on people that talk about this stuff. Our guys at ESPN, Barron, those guys, that's on them to hype that game up. It doesn't matter that it's early. It's early in the season. It's week 5.
Like, props to Chris Felica. And now I'm saying I understand it's week 5. I'm wishing that was a week 10, week 11, week 12 kind of game because it's so massive, right? Because that's going to alter but it's going to alter standings. It's going to alter every. I wish that there was more buildup because these two teams are going to keep winning, and I wish that it was just a bigger game. But instead, it was kind of an afterthought last week.
Well, that it was only an afterthought to those who don't pay attention to the sport. I just disagree. We're just going to disagree there. I mean, LSU Florida is a massive game, and it's week 6. It's this 1 week.
No disagreement. That's no disagreement. All I'm saying is that for the mainstream fans that don't pay attention as much. I wish
if there was more week 10 or week 12 and both of them had a loss against, let's say they split against Oklahoma and Texas, both of them do. All right. And they both come in with one loss apiece. That game's not as big as last week.
They both play Oklahoma and Texas like late in the year, like at the end of the season.
It just happens that way.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like you could have played it just a touch before that to make it where they're both, you know, 6-1 or 6-0 and whatever.
I think it's just fine. And it didn't get the build up because people didn't give it the credit it deserved.
Yeah.
And that's shame on those people, not on those schools.
No, you're right. I'm not blaming the schools for that at all. All right. So let's talk about this. We're going to move out to Pac-12 after dark. Did you stay up for this Stanford and Washington?
No. This game is boring. It's boring. At halftime, I was like, I'm going to bed.
This is boring football. Let me read you some stats here. Stanford was, before this game, 111th in rushing offense, 99th in yards per carry, 116th overall offense. They were down to only 6 healthy offensive linemen on the team. They had
lost another one last night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. They got down to 6. And then they were down to their third string quarterback, and this team pushed Washington around to the tune of about 500 yards. That is inexcusable.
I don't have an answer for that.
So I saw somebody, I think maybe it was Stuart Mandel or somebody else, tweeted last night and said, it's almost like the Pac-12 just erases all of their history. Like they go into every week and it's just kind of a roll of the dice. And you never know who's going to show up or what's going to happen or anything. And I cannot understand. Like, I'll tell you this. I did bet Stanford last night. When that line got to like plus 16 and a half, I thought, man, that is absurd. Like, I understand Stanford's really bad, but I'm also like, Stanford's at home and they always play Washington tough. And I think people are just overvaluing this Washington team a little bit. Jacob Eason looked terrible in some of these spots. And it wasn't that Stanford was getting a ton of pressure on it, but they got pressure in spots. But man, some of the throws that he was making were just absurd. Like, he could not hit his receivers. He was throwing the ball behind him. He was just all over the place. And I can't figure out what's going on with him. He's got a hell of an arm. But, man, he's got some serious problems. And now, good luck telling me who's going to win the Pac-12 North other than Oregon, which didn't look great against against the Cal team that was missing their starting quarterback.
So, if you bet money line against I'm just going to start betting the money line against every dog in the Pac-12. I mean, that's just what you're going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, this past week you would have went 3-1 if you bet all the money line dogs. Last week you would have only won two games, but they would have been a decent payout. Two of the five, so you're doing 2-3. The week before that, you'd have went 1-2.
Maybe you just round robin them.
3. That's what I'm saying. 3-4. You would have went 4-2 the week before that. So in just 3 weeks, 4, 7, 8, 9. You would have been 9-5.
Yeah, and if you round robin parlay them,
some of these are hella payouts.
Yeah,
I mean, there's massive payouts.
So it's
plus 350 or better.
It's completely absurd, and I just. But the Pac-12 does this every year. They cannibalize themselves.
I know. That's why I kind of hate myself that it was last night when I kind of thought about, and I see Cal, you know, giving Oregon all they want. And I'm thinking, I kind of should have put a math together on this beforehand. The Pac-12 is just so up and down. Literally any team can beat any team any week. There is no big dog, and there really isn't that bad of a bottom feeder. Yeah. Like, they don't have a top and a bottom. They just have a big-ass middle. And there are varying degrees, but it only depends on what week they are.
Now, you just right
bet
about
the
that.
Underdog on the money line. Doesn't matter if they're playing an auto-conference team. Doesn't matter. Whoever the underdog is in the game, you just bet them.
Yeah. Now, you're right. You're 100% right.
You're
going
to get good payouts. You're going to get good odds. And you're well over 50% anyway. So you're on the positive side of the VIG heavily.
Heavily.
And you're well over 50%.
Now you were right about that.
I'm just doing that blind from here on out. That's what I'm doing the rest of the weekends. So I'll let you know how it turns out. If favorite starts coming in, I'm screwed. But
that's but so far we doubt it, right?
Yep.
Let's move on to some more Big 12 talk. You know, we talked about how there's a clear divide between the contenders and pretenders. These two are pretty much contenders. Texas 42, West Virginia 31, and Oklahoma beats Kansas 45-20. Texas was outgained by West Virginia. This game was strange to watch. I don't know if you watched any of this one.
I watched a lot of it.
And it was fun because it went back and forth, like the whole ball game. And West Virginia, you know, got it within four, and then Texas scored, and then Texas scored to put it 35-17.
Yeah, and when that happened, it was over.
Yeah, and then what's nuts is like you're looking at the spread, right? So depending on where you got it at either 10.5, 11, or 11.5 for Texas. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy that it tends to come down to this number pretty frequently. But Texas goes up with a touchdown to go up 42-24 with 3 minutes left in the game. And West Virginia drives it right down the field and scores to make it 42-31. So depending on what side of the 11 you were on, you either had a really good game or a really bad game. But Texas does this, and they're going to continue to do this because their defense is just out. Like the good thing is their offense can continue to do this.
I think that's why I think it's maybe not laughable. It's not the right word. I just don't think this Texas team can beat Oklahoma. And the reason being is because if that defense rolls into the Red River Rivalry, Oklahoma's putting up 70. They just going to score every drive, and every drive is going to take 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, at Texas was outgained.
They're scoring fast, and they're scoring every drive.
Texas had 427 yards. 216 of that was rushing, by the way. Everybody was concerned about the rushing attack. Rushing attack's fine. But West Virginia.
I'd be careful about saying it's fine. It looked fine against West Virginia, but everybody's ran on West Virginia.
That's true. True. You got a point, but everybody.
And Holgorsen spent 5-6 years of just completely ignoring the defense. So that defensive side of the ball has no talent at all.
No, I mean, you're entirely right. But if you look over at the, you know, Oklahoma-Kansas game, I mean, Kansas had 130 rushing yards. Oklahoma had
to pull out trick plays to get points on the board.
Yeah, that's true. That's your boy Les doing it up. Doing it up. So I think next week is going to be a lot of fun. It sets up a Red River showdown that's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
That's where I thought game day was going, just for the simple fact that they were at Florida last week. That's all. I thought this is a big enough rivalry game to where you can say we won't go to the best game of the weekend, because I don't know that it's necessarily the best game of the weekend. And I think this rivalry holds enough water to justify saying we can go there no matter what else is on TV and not piss anybody off. That was my argument and my thought. I was 100% certain they were. I'm very glad they're coming to LSU. Not upset about that. Not complaining about that. I just find it strange that they're going to Florida 2 weeks in a row. Like, the same team 2 weeks in a row is just weird to me. How many stories are you going to tell? Because we just heard all the Florida stories. And all the, you know, the whole game day experience with Florida.
Yeah, but now you're going for LSU. There.
Yeah.
So the difference is, I think ESPN already threw Fox a bone with Iowa State. And now, because Red River's on Fox again, like, they've gone to Red River a lot. Like, they go, it's almost every year.
But they also go to the Iron Bowl every year because it's a big rivalry. They also try to go to the game every year because it's one of the country's biggest rivalries.
But yeah, but those two that you were talking about, like, those two are on the same weekend, right?
Well, yeah, so they have to – basically, they alternate every other year which one they're going to go to, and or they go to the one that matters the most at that point in time.
Yeah.
But this is owned by itself. And because it's owned by itself, there's usually nothing else that can compete or stand with it.
And I think this game
earns that reputation.
I mean, there is a lot that will compete with it next week. I mean, it's just because it's not just Florida and whatever. It's just a quick run through. So on Friday, you got Virginia and Miami, Colorado, Oregon. You got Alabama, A&M. You got Oklahoma, Texas. You got Florida State, Clemson, which, God, I wish Florida State was in a better position. Michigan State, Wisconsin. Washington State, Arizona State, USC, Notre Dame, Penn State, Iowa, Florida, LSU, Utah, Oregon State, Hawaii, some of these I'm just throwing out. But
None of those games are as close to LSU, Florida,
and
Oklahoma, Texas. None of them.
They're
going to be good games. They're going to be awesome to watch. They're going to be awesome to talk about. And all of this, that's probably going to be the best game. A, because no defense is going to be played. Zero defense is going to be played.
You're probably right there.
They're going to have over 100 total points. It's going to hit over 100. Both these teams hitting 50.
I am super interested to see exactly what LSU's offense is going to be able to do against Florida's defense.
Oh, me too.
Because Florida's defense looked really, really good.
This is going to be where Joe going to have to either stand up or sit down. Yeah. That's it. We're going to find out who he is this week.
You are right about that. All right, let's move into topic number 8. Group of 5 New Year's 6 candidates. Now, we don't talk about this all the time, but obviously you and I, big fans of the Group of 5 conferences, wearing my App State shirt today, of course. They didn't play this week, but here's what we got. Boise State won last night 38-13 over UNLV. SMU with a comeback for the ages. And Tulsa just completely that game away, completely choked. And so they win 43-37 in triple overtime. Memphis wins 55-32 or 55-33, whatever the numbers were, they win at Louisiana Monroe. App State was off, but Cincinnati, of course, gets the big win. I think it's going to be tough for Cincy because that Ohio State game was
that one loss to Ohio State. If you're only lost to Ohio State and you win the American, the other team is an undefeated Boise, that is horse crap. Hey, Boise won't have a tough game the rest of the year. That's close to what the American teams are going to play.
No, I think, look, the Mountain West is
SMU,
good.
Central Florida, not going anywhere, and Cincinnati and Memphis are four legit teams that would hang in all Power Five conferences right now.
Yeah.
No, I didn't say they would beat the Alabamas and the Ohio States, so they would hang. Nobody else.
They'd hang with everybody
else. When you take the blue chips out of those conferences, they're just as good as everybody else in those conferences.
I understand where you're coming from. I'm just coming from an outside perspective. That's going to be tough for some people to get over. Now, I think if it's their only loss and they roll through the rest of this AAC schedule, then absolutely, I think that they will be higher ranked, because I do think Boise could end up with a loss somewhere. I don't know where, but they've had some spots. They still got to play Fresno. They still got to play Utah State. They still got, you know.
Those teams aren't close to as good as Boise.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. Now,
there's a massive separation between talent in those teams.
Tulane I brought up because they do have the one loss to Auburn, but they kept that one close.
And same thing for them. Yeah. They go undefeated the rest of the way. The American's just stacked. I left them out of that 14 mix. There's five. Yeah. The American is absolutely loaded. People who crap on it just don't understand football and they don't watch football. The American is better than the ACC right now. It's better than the Pac-12 right now. Today, it's better than two conferences.
I think the top part is. I think the bottom part is.
What? Part of the Americans worse than, well, yes, the Pac-12 doesn't have a top or a bottom. It's a big middle.
Yeah.
The ACC, really? You don't think the bottom teams could hang with the bottom teams in the ACC? Because those teams are trash.
Well, some of them are, but I mean, NC State, like, they still walloped East Carolina. Like, you know, those kind of games will still happen. You know, I don't know.
And all we care about is the top part, by the way.
No, you're right. You're right.
Let's acknowledge that fact.
The top four, top five teams in the conference.
They're five deep. Are there five deep in the ACC? So Clemson beats the best team in the American. Let's take that out.
Well, so after this, I'm actually going to talk about the ACC. So let's go ahead and finish up with this. The reason that I bring up the group of five stuff, we've got a banger on Thursday night coming up. And you don't know what game it is yet, do you?
No, I haven't looked at next week's schedule at all, hardly.
We've got App State going to Louisiana on Thursday night. We got Billy Napier. We got Eli Drinkwitz. This is going to be a massive, massive game because Louisiana has that one loss to Mississippi State, and it was a 10-point loss, but they have been obliterating people. Like, this is a fantastic – they are so much better than I thought that they were going to be at this point. Because I had them 7-5 this season. You know, they went 7-7 last year. But the way that they are recruiting and the way that this team is playing right now, if they can go undefeated the rest of the way through the season and end with just one loss, I think Louisiana could get it. Like, there's enough hype about the team.
They would need Boise to lose a game.
Oh, yeah.
And the American to cannibalize themselves.
I think any of these teams will need Boise to lose. Like, Boise is in the top 15 already.
That's going to piss me off, by the way.
I mean, Boise goes undefeated. You don't think they deserve the spot?
Nope.
You may be right.
A one-loss American team is better than a Boise team. They just are. But they don't have the brand recognition as Boise has. So they're not going to get the credit for it.
I'll have to dig through some numbers. We might talk about this on the show when we do it on Tuesday night. But I think that, like, the Mountain West as a conference is actually rated higher than the AAC. Now, a lot of that's because of the bottom dwellers, but we can double-check into that. Because SMU, of course, is 6-0, which, by the way, only two teams that are bowl-bound, bowl-eligible at this point, SMU and Ohio State.
Well, yeah, they haven't had their bye week yet.
Exactly. The only two 6-0 teams in the country on October 6th. Kind of crazy to think about. Also, first time that SMU has gone 6-0 since 1982. Since the death penalty. So Sonny Dykes is doing a job there. Let's go ahead and move on to the next the next topic, and you didn't get to watch one of these. Pitt 33, Duke 30 last night. That was in Durham. It was the best game of the weekend. It's not even close. That was the best game. It was the most anxiety riddled, I guess, because it's just back and forth, a lot of swings in momentum. The other one is Virginia Tech 42, Miami 35, and this was an ugly football game. The ACC is an absolute mess. Like, that's, I thought last week that Duke might be the second best team in the ACC, and they could still be. But
yeah, I think they absolutely could be. That's okay. That doesn't mean they're great, though.
Yeah, Virginia, I think, still really, really good. But this, so Pitt goes up 26-3 in this ball game, and they allow Duke to come back and take a 30-26 lead. Now, I don't know if you saw this. It was 26-24, and Duke was going for a 2-point conversion, and they got the 2-point conversion to tie the game. So it was 26-26. And they signal, yeah, good. He got the 2-pointer, and then they came back out on the field, and nobody knew what was going on. They didn't signal that they were going back to review. They didn't, like, there was no whistle, anything like that. It was an inadvertent signal from the field judge that was all the way over back on the sideline at the end of the end zone, and he had stopped the play. Like, he didn't blow his whistle. But he was standing off by himself and did a, like, the wipe it off thing where he stopped the play before the kid got into the end zone, and nobody saw it. Nobody knew what was happening. And they made him retry the 2-point conversion because of that. Like, it was absolutely insane. So they retried the 2-point conversion. They didn't get it. Then, of course, Pitt punts the ball back to him. Duke comes down, scores, takes a 30-26 lead. They don't get that 2-point conversion either. And then Pitt, of course, comes down the field, scores a touchdown, wins the game. It was bonkers. Like, there was just so much wrong with what happened.
It would be incredible if the ACC had a network where people could actually watch their games, because I think the BC Louisville game was a really good game too.
Yeah.
And all these other conferences have their own network, and they have these TV deals with ESPN or Fox and ACC. I mean, it would be really nice if they had something like that, or if they admitted something like that or created it. So,
or if maybe they would even just toss it into ESPN Plus so that, you know, people could actually
something,
get it.
Something, something, yeah, without having to bootleg illegally watch TV.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
Congratulations, so, ACC.
Along with that,
your conference sucks.
Yeah. And now people can't even watch you suck. Virginia, yeah, Tech,
well, no,
42.
The game's great. That would give them some credibility.
Yeah.
It'd give them some national credibility if people could actually watch this crap.
No, you're right about that. Now, people could watch this one because this was on ESPN. Virginia Tech 42, Miami 35. Miami, good gracious. The Williams kid, 3 interceptions and a fumble to start off the game. Went down 28-0. I mean, they just...
Justin Fuente lives to fight another day.
You got that right. Nikosi Perry, he had, let's see, he was 28 out of 47, 422 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, and that's after he did not start the ball game. It's just insane. The other kid, the Williams kid, that we all thought, okay, well, he looked decent enough against a really good Florida defense.
That's right.
He came out, he was 4 out of 7 for like 47 yards. His only 3 incompletions were all interceptions. And then he got pulled. Like, it just, it's so frustrating. I don't know what to make of this Miami team. Now, I do want to question something really quick.
Okay.
So, they're down 28-0. They come back, make it 28-14. Virginia Tech scores again, make it 35-14. And this is all, you know, late in second half. And they went for 2. Miami did. And this is midway through the fourth quarter. And they went for 2 to make it 35-29. Now, what that did is it set up a chance for them to win the game in regulation without having to go for two at that point, right? So you figure you got a 50-50 shot to actually hit these two-point conversions. Well, if you go in and do the first one and you don't get it, well, then you can go for two the second time and hopefully get it. I'm curious what you think about this, because the way that it has been done forever, before people started looking at analytics and probability and all that kind of mess, is, okay, well, we're down by 14 points, so if we score a touchdown, we're going to kick the extra point, and then we can kick the other extra point, and we can go to overtime. And, like, there's no ties anymore, so it's not like Miami was facing a vastly superior team like North Carolina was last week with Clemson, and you're going to go for two for the win there. I mean, you're at home. You're supposed to be the better team. Why would you do this?
There was time on the clock, right?
Oh, like, there was plenty of time. Not,
yeah.
They were down 35-27.
I think you do it because even if you don't get in the end zone again and you can make two stops, two field goals puts it in overtime. But if you just kick the extra point, then you have to score another touchdown to be able to either take it to overtime or have a chance at going for a two-point conversion to win. I don't have a problem with it. I like going for two more than not. I think these teams, when you get down to the 2.5-yard line, I think very few defenses have the capability of just shutting the team down. I think you're right. I think it's close to 50-50. So, therefore, if I get it every other time, it's a wash. If I get it 51% of the time, it's a benefit to me. If you've got a good enough offense or you think the other defense is struggling at some point in time, especially in the red zone, especially the goal line, not just red zone, then you're looking at, you know, a much greater percentage, and you get that two or three times in a game, that's the ball game. I mean, that's an extra score for you. So yeah,
it's like playing poker. If you're an advantage player, then that's how you do it. Or yes, blackjack.
Yeah, you just care about the advantage. You don't care. It's a math problem. It is. It's analytics. It's a math problem. It's not conventional wisdom. And so, yeah, I don't have a problem with it at all. I think it's smart. And like I said, there was plenty of time. I thought there was enough time on the clock to where we're going to have two more drives. We make a stop and they punt to us and we kick two field goals and we're in this thing. We don't have to get it in the end zone. They were struggling to score at that point in time to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's one of those deals where if we can just kick field goals and take it into OT, we're okay.
The funny part about this is that they did come back and score again to tie the game, and then Bubba backs and missed the extra point.
Yeah.
So well, it ended up 35-35.
That's the other side of it is college kickers, man, these extra points aren't gimmies.
No, not anymore.
I think I would rather put, now of course their quarterback was struggling greatly,
yeah.
But I think I would just trust my offense on the field running another offensive play than putting it in the kicker's hand right now.
No, you're probably right. You are probably right. So like I said, the ACC is a mess right now. I don't know. I guess Virginia is the second best team, but of course they
Virginia's
got handled.
Virginia's the second best team, and we need to stop playing with that. That's the truth.
Yeah, I think so. Now that's not to say that they're not going to lose more games. I think
right now we only can judge them for what we've seen.
Yeah, and what we've seen is Virginia definitely the second best team. They do not hurt themselves. Of course, they turned the ball over five times at Notre Dame.
That's different. Notre Dame is one of the best teams in all of college football.
Yeah, they're elite. They're definitely elite.
Yes, they are.
All right, let's move on. Topic number 10, Texas Tech 45, Oklahoma State 35. Now, this contenders and pretenders line that we drew in the Big 12, I think this makes Oklahoma State a pretender.
I'll agree with that.
I really wanted them to be good because Mike Gundy, like, this offense is still a lot of fun. But yeah, when you do have a younger, inexperienced quarterback, like we talked about so many times already, this is kind of a theme this week. Oklahoma State had two fumbles and three interceptions in this game. Texas Tech had zero turnovers. Jet Duffy, like, yes, he's a backup, but he played a ton last year while Alan Bowman was out then. Now he's playing a lot again. Jet Duffy for Texas Tech, 26 out of 44, 424 yards passing, four touchdowns. He had five rushes for 16 yards and a touchdown. Spencer Sanders, I think, is a dynamic player. He can absolutely fling the football, man. He can spin that thing like nothing. And yet, he does still make some really questionable decisions. I was actually getting my hair cut yesterday, and I was sitting watching this game at Sport Clips, and I saw him throw one of those picks. And I forget, I think it was third quarter maybe. It was after halftime. And I just...
Yeah. They're down pretty big.
Yeah, but the decision... Because it's not like... They weren't down so big that you had to stray or you had to, like, take major risks because they were moving the football. Like, that's what drove me nuts is that you weren't having to take risks to move the ball. Like, Texas Tech's defense isn't that good. And yet, man, he just made some boneheaded decisions. And I think that's kind of what Oklahoma State's offense is this year, right? Chuba Hubbard, still fantastic. I mean, he had, what, 150 rushing yards? Like, he went over 1,000 or over 1,100 for the season so far. Man, there's just a clear division between the upper echelon, you know, top four in the Big 12, and then everybody else. Now, the issue is they can all cannibalize each other, right? But, man, that was a tough one to watch, especially after watching Texas Tech get absolutely demolished by Oklahoma last week.
Yeah, but that's different. See,
I know it's different. I know, but you'd like to think that Oklahoma State and Oklahoma are at least somewhat close.
No, God, no. They're not close. They're not close, Gary.
That's I don't know why you're looking at me like that.
Because you have this expectation. Like, Texas Tech's defense, you said Texas Tech's defense not very good. I disagree. I think Texas Tech's defense is really good. And going on the road to Lubbock is a tough place to play right now with a really good defense. Oklahoma beat them up. Okay. Oklahoma's going to beat up everybody.
Now, I get, yeah, Oklahoma is definitely.
Who else has beat them up? Who else has scored a bunch on them?
Arizona. that wasn't exactly like a great Arizona game. Like, but Arizona beat them 28-14. So yeah,
I mean, 28, no,
it's not a lot, but they had a lot of yards.
One touchdown a quarter. So.
They were able to move the football on them. It was disappointing because I've got such high expectations for Oklahoma State. I really thought this was going to be like the bounce back year. And they had looked really good so far. They'd been able to put up points on everybody. But they just kind of ran out of time in this one. But they started moving the ball really well late. Let's move on. Topic number 11. And this will close this up. And we've got one extra point before our top 10. Georgia 43, Tennessee 14. Now, I don't bring this up to actually have like a massive discussion about the game. Tennessee kicked Jeremy Banks off the team on Friday. And they started a freshman quarterback, Brandon Maurer. And this freshman quarterback looked so much better than Justin Guarantano, which, by the way, I think I said that right. I think it's Guarantano, not Guarantano. But, man, late in the ball game, Pruitt went back to Guarantano, or Tano. Jesus. I'm just confused at, because Tennessee came out and had some fight early in this game.
They led the game the majority of the entire first half, or tied. And it was at the very end, Pruitt, I don't know what happened at the very end of the first half with the play calling and how they botched that to end up going down by 12 when they were leading the entire way. That's so much on Pruitt, not these guys. Let me tell you the difference between, because I watched so much of this football game, the difference between Tennessee and everybody else in the SEC. In the SEC, you either have power or you have speed. Many teams have both. Tennessee's wide receivers, the middle of the field was wide open all day long. If I'm Florida, if I'm everybody else in the SEC watching this film, I'm going to tell you, you can throw on Georgia in the middle of the field all day. They were wide open. These slant passes were there. They were hitting guys in stride and they were catching them. Almost any other wide receiver in the SEC at any other school takes those to the house because they split the defenders where both DBs or miss the guy and he wide open and it takes off. Tennessee's wide receivers are so damn slow that they would barely get three or four steps before five guys were on them.
Yeah.
And they had the angle, they had the lane, it was clear. They should at least get 10 to 15 extra yards of yak. And they got almost nothing. And that is a huge difference. Now, I have no idea why they pulled the kid that started the game. I can't get inside Pruitt's head.
I'll say this. He did look, I'm not going to say rattled. I'm going to say he did not look as efficient once they got down. Right?
A really good defensive coach on the other side went in and made an adjustment.
Yeah.
And Tennessee came out and did the exact same thing they did that they were always going to do because they don't make any coaching adjustments whatsoever. And that's on the freshman.
What was it?
Not going to take that crap.
He started like, I want to say 8 for 11 or something like that. And then went 0 for 11 or 0 for 12 or whatever it was, something crazy. After that, and then he ended up having, you know, a pretty good rest of the night before he got pulled. Now, I think that they may have just pulled the kid because of they were getting blown out.
Oh, yeah, you don't want him to get hurt. Maybe if you think, all right, we've got a future here. No, okay, I'll give him that.
But I'm also thinking you got to get the kid reps.
Nothing to do with the game at all, but just watching this game and going through some different stuff and talking to some guys that I was with.
Where did you watch this game, by the way?
Oh, at home. I didn't leave the house. Okay. We just had some people over. And I think I know if I was the athletic director of Tennessee, I know who my next coach would be. I would offer Cutcliffe any amount of money he wanted to come.
They did that the last time though.
Huh?
They did that before Butch got hired. And Cutcliffe told
him
that
was a long time ago. But here's the difference is I think in 3 years, they're going to have an opportunity to get one of the best quarterbacks in all of college football.
And who is it?
That's Arch Manning.
Okay. Yeah, I guess now, if you do that.
Cutcliffe's 65 years old. But I think they need an adult in the room. I think they need somebody to stabilize it. And it wasn't Fulmer that called Cutcliffe last time. It was somebody else associated with the program.
You've got a point there.
Today it would be Phil. And I wouldn't lowball him because I also think they tried to lowball him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because they were paying too many coaches. And they're still paying too many coaches, and that's fine. But I would do what Alabama did to Saban. I would just fly to him, and we're not leaving until you're on the plane. So we're going to stay here. You're going to come. And Cutcliffe's not going to bring them the national power. Okay, they're not going to compete for national titles.
But he can build a really good foundation.
He will bridge the gap between 50 feet of crap that they've been forever and making sure they're at least 6-6, 7-5 every year, making a bowl game every year, and building a stable program, get kids in there that – won't get in trouble, that will build a good foundation, and then when he's ready to retire, they can make a decent hire because that job is now a good job, and right now it's a laughing stock.
Yeah, you got a very valid point there.
The problem is they took no for an answer and they moved on. You're so bad. You can't go get the next young gun because that hasn't worked at all. The program needs a level of stability before you can do something dynamic with it.
Now you're 100% right. I agree with everything you just said.
I just don't say no.
Yeah.
I don't take no.
All right.
It's not awesome.
That wraps up the starting 11. Let's move into an extra point here. Nebraska 13, Northwestern 10. Ugly football game, but man, if Adrian Martinez is out for an extended amount of time, which who knows? Right, but I don't know what the status is currently, but that is a bad. It's already not a great football team anyway.
I thought the backup played fine. He's been with Frost forever. I think he's. We have seen this in college football. Backup quarterbacks just don't scare me anymore, man. They don't.
You may be right, but like we saw it last year. Like it. I mean, when he went down,
that wasn't this kid.
Yeah, I know. That's
like. Like, you can't compare last year when it was somebody else. That doesn't make sense.
I don't know. This is one that we will monitor. Because if Martinez is out, I don't think that offense runs the same way. And then
he was playing so great, right?
No, you're right about that. Northwestern losing again definitely hurts our over 6.5 for the season.
Jesus Christ. They got to win that. As soon as he goes out, you can't win that game.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a bad football team.
Let's talk about our top 10. Is that you got your top 10 ready to roll?
Yep.
Do you want to do yours first?
Sure.
All right, go on ahead.
Ohio State, LSU, Wisconsin, Georgia, Florida, Oklahoma, Bama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Penn State.
Okay. You rolled right through those. my top 10. I've got, in the 10 spot, I've got Notre Dame. In the 9 spot, I've got Clemson. 8 spot, I've got Penn State. 7 is Wisconsin. 6, Oklahoma. 5, I moved Florida up to 5. I have
5.
I've got Alabama 4. I've got LSU 3. I've got Georgia 2. I've got Ohio State 1. So I think Ohio State and Georgia are the two most complete teams. I think Georgia can be got, but also think any of these other teams can be got other than Ohio State. I think Ohio State's going to win the national championship. Like, I think they are unbelievable right now.
I'm very interested to see them play Wisconsin.
I can believe I'm interested to see them play against Penn State, against a team that's got comparable athletes.
Okay. That too.
And so, and we can see
State's not a great football team. Okay.
Yeah.
Like they're just not.
No, I mean, you're okay. I'm with you.
They haven't beat a ranked team yet.
No, that's true. That's true.
Now, they've killed everybody. They've done what they're supposed to do, but they haven't beat a ranked team yet.
Yeah, as far as, like, the efficiency metrics, like, yes. They and Wisconsin both, Ohio State, Wisconsin, have dominated. Absolutely dominated, which is a predictive sign of a really good team. And you saw Wisconsin do it against Michigan. And Iowa is like the lesser version of Wisconsin right now. The
poor man's version of Wisconsin. Yeah. And Michigan handled them.
Yeah, absolutely handled them. So, it's going to be a really interesting rest of the season. I can't wait. We're in October. We started out with a good weekend. College football is rocking and rolling. Week 7 is going to be absolute fire. I can't wait for seeing these bangers next week. As always, the show brought to you by Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They got 6 incredible sports books. We're a fan of all of them. Go check them out for yourself. See what our friends down in the Delta have got for you over at tunicatravel.com. You can find us over at winningcureseverything.com. We will see you guys again, I think, NFL recap Tuesday, I think.
Whenever you want to do it.
Whenever we do it. And then, of course, we've got our previews and picks and everything else that will come out as well. We'll try and have another Friday interview as well. That the one with Jeff Ma last week actually turned out pretty good numbers. So we got a lot on the docket. Go hit subscribe for us over on the podcast, leave a nice review on Apple Podcast, and hit subscribe on YouTube and leave some comments for us. Tell us what you think about the show. Chris, I think that's gonna wrap it up. Let's go watch some NFL, buddy.
Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.